You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
Some homes are more than just walls and a roof. They carry whispers, echoes of the past, and shadows that defy the light of day. This story begins like many others. An old house, a family eager for a fresh start, and the hope of building new memories. But as the days turned to weeks, those hopes gave way to unease, then fear, and finally a desperate attempt to understand what had been awakened. Lila was no stranger to the occasional creak of an old floorboard or the drafty chill of a historic home. But what she and her family experienced in the quiet corners of this house was far beyond anything they could explain. From the discovery of a forgotten journal to the eerie game that opened a door to something they couldn't see, Lila's story is one of mystery, fear, and the thin line between this world and the next. Tonight, we'll explore the questions that linger. Were these events the product of imagination and fear? Or did something truly step forward from the shadows? Whatever the answer, the story that unfolds will leave you looking over your shoulder and wondering what might be lurking just beyond your sight. Let's get to the letter. They write, "I don't even know where to start. This story has been weighing on me for years, and even as I sit down to write this, I can feel the hairs on the back of my neck standing on edge. Maybe putting it into words will help, but a part of me is afraid that just thinking about it might stir everything up again. It all began when I moved into that house, a beautiful, century-old home tucked away in a quiet neighborhood. It wasn't exactly my dream home. The floors creaked, the walls seemed to hold the chill no matter how high we set the heat, and the whole place just felt heavy. Still, it had charm, and I convinced myself that any unease was just my imagination. Things started subtly. A missing coffee mug here, a door left open there. Little things that were easy to explain away, especially with two kids running around. My youngest, though, she was the first to notice something that didn't sit right. One night, she came into my room clutching her blanket, wide-eyed and trembling. "Mommy," she whispered, "the man with no face is in my room." I froze. My heart wanted to tell her it was just a bad dream. But something about the way she said it, so matter-of-factly, stuck with me. I walked her back to her room, tucked her in, and promised to keep the man away. But as I stood in the hallway afterward, I couldn't shake the feeling that we weren't alone. A few weeks later, I was cleaning out the attic. It wasn't much, a cramped space with exposed beams and boxes left behind by the previous owners. That's when I found it. An old wooden chest, locked but brittle enough to pry open. Inside, I discovered a stack of yellowed letters, a fraying leather journal, and a sketch of what looked like a man's face, though the details were smudged and hauntingly incomplete. The journal was the most unsettling. It belonged to a woman who lived in the house decades earlier, and her entries were littered with descriptions of strange noises, shadows that seemed to move on their own, and worst of all, a recurring figure she called the Watcher. I remember reading one line that chilled me to the bone. "He's always in the corners watching, but never stepping forward." Still, I brushed it off as old superstitions. At least I did until my sister, Emily, came to stay with me. Emily has always been skeptical, the type to roll her eyes at ghost stories and horror movies, but even she couldn't ignore what happened one night when we were in the living room. It was quiet, just the two of us sitting on the couch scrolling through our phones when we both heard it. A faint tapping, rhythmic and deliberate, coming from the wall behind us. We turned to look at each other, neither wanting to speak, as the tapping grew louder and then stopped altogether. "Maybe it's the pipes," Emily muttered, but I could hear the doubt in her voice. Later that night, she woke me up. Her face was pale and she was visibly shaking. "Lila," she whispered. "I saw him. The man with no face. He was standing at the end of the hallway." I wanted to reassure her, but deep down I felt the truth settle over me, like a cold blanket. Whatever this was, it wasn't just a figment of my imagination. A few days later, my best friend Kate came over, and in an attempt to lighten the mood, she suggested we try a Ouija board. I laughed at first. What better way to tempt fate, right? But part of me was curious. If there really was something in the house, maybe we could find out what it wanted. Kate found a printable Ouija board online, and we used a piece of cardboard as the planchette. I remember the three of us sitting there, candles flickering in the dim light, feeling equal parts silly and terrified. We placed our fingers on the makeshift planchette and said, "Is anyone here?" For a moment, nothing happened. I almost felt relieved. Then slowly, the planchette began to move. It spelled out, "Hello." We all froze. Kate was the first to speak. "Who are you?" "John," it spelled. My heart raced. I couldn't help but think of the journal, the shadowy figure, the tapping. Could this be the same entity the woman had written about? We asked a few harmless questions, how old he was when he had lived here, and the answers came slowly, but surely. Then Kate asked the one question. I wish she hadn't. "Can you give us a sign?" Immediately, the planchette darted across the board and spelled two letters. P.C. Before we could process what it meant, Kate's computer screen lit up behind us, flashing with dozens of pop-ups and error messages. The room felt electric, the air thick and suffocating. "Turn it off!" Emily screamed, but the computer wouldn't shut down. It took nearly 5 minutes for the chaos to stop, and when it finally did, none of us said a word. We just stared at each other, the weight of what had happened settling in. We packed up the board that night, but the unease lingered. It felt like we had opened a door we couldn't close. And in the days that followed, the shadows seemed darker, the tapping louder, and the house colder. The days following our Ouija session were some of the most unsettling of my life. The air in the house felt heavier, and every creak or gust of wind seemed to carry with it a sense of foreboding. My sister Emily, who had been skeptical at first, refused to sleep without a light on. Kate wouldn't come back over at all, and honestly, I didn't blame her. The most terrifying moment came just a few nights after the Ouija board incident. I'd gone to bed early, hoping that a good night's sleep would shake the lingering unease. Sometime after midnight, I woke to the sound of soft footsteps in the hallway. At first, I thought it was one of my kids, but when I got up to check, the hallway was empty. I turned back toward my room, and that's when I saw it. A shadow, darker than the rest, standing at the end of the hallway. It didn't move, didn't make a sound, but I could feel its gaze. I wanted to scream, to run, but my body wouldn't cooperate. I just stood there, frozen, until the shadow seemed to dissolve into the darkness. The next morning, I tried to convince myself it had been a dream, but Emily's face told me otherwise. "You saw him too, didn't you?" she asked, her voice barely a whisper. I nodded. We decided to do some research about the house's history. The local library had records of property sales, and that's where we uncovered the story of a man named John Harrow. He had lived in the house in the late 1800s and was described as a loner with no family. According to the records, he had died under suspicious circumstances, an apparent fall down the attic stairs, but one newspaper article hinted at something darker. Whispers of foul play, though no one was ever charged. Armed with this knowledge, I decided to contact someone who might be able to help. Through an online forum, I found a woman named Clara who claimed to be sensitive to spirits. She agreed to visit the house, and see what she could sense. When Clara arrived, the house seemed eerily quiet, as if it was waiting for something. She walked from room to room, pausing occasionally to close her eyes and murmur to herself. When she reached the attic, she stopped cold. "He's here," she said, her voice firm. "But he's not at peace." She explained that John's spirit was tied to the house, unable to move on because of the violent nature of his death. She believed the Ouija session had stirred him, making him more active and aware of our presence. Clara suggested performing a cleansing ritual, but I was hesitant. What if it made things worse? She warned me that if I didn't, his activity would likely escalate. That night, as I sat in my room, I decided to give it a try. Clara had left me with instructions: burn sage, speak firmly, and tell him to leave. I followed her directions, walking through each room and repeating the words, "This is my home now. You are not welcome here." For a moment, the house felt lighter, as if the oppressive weight had lifted. But then, as I reached the attic, the temperature dropped sharply, and I heard it, a low, guttural growl. It wasn't human, and it wasn't coming from me. I ran downstairs, slamming the attic door behind me. The growl didn't follow, but I knew the ritual hadn't worked. In the days that followed, the activity slowed, but it never completely stopped. Lights would flicker, shadows would shift in the corners of my vision, and every so often, I'd hear faint tapping at night. The final straw came a month later. I'd finally decided to throw out the Ouija board and the planchette, hoping it would bring some peace. But the day after I did, I found the planchette on my kitchen counter, scorched and cracked down the middle. I don't know if it's all in my head or if there's something about this house that refuses to let us go. But even now, as I sit here writing this, I feel it. That same heavy presence lurking just beyond the light. Tony, I don't know if you believe in ghosts or spirits, but I can tell you this. Some things are better left undisturbed, and some doors, once opened, can never truly be closed. Sincerely, Lila. Stories like Lila's remind us of the fragile boundary between the world we know and the unknown. What began as a family moving into an old home turned into an experience that defies logic, leaving questions that might never have answers. Was the figure in the hallway an echo of the past, a restless spirit unable to move on? Or was it something darker, feeding off fear and uncertainty? Psychologically, there are explanations that could account for some of these events. Old houses creak, drafts create chills, and the power of suggestion, especially after reading a journal like Lila discovered, can make us see patterns where none exist. Sleep paralysis, too, could explain the shadowy figure standing at the end of the hallway, as terrifying as that might feel in the moment. But what about the other pieces of this puzzle? The planchette appearing scorched and cracked after being discarded, the computer malfunction tied to the Ouija session, and the chilling growl in the attic. These moments suggest something beyond coincidence or imagination. Something that transcends what we can explain with science. Could Lila have unknowingly invited this presence into her life? Many believe that the Ouija board is not a toy, but a tool, a conduit for opening doors we don't fully understand. If that's true, Lila's story serves as a cautionary tale about meddling with forces that might not have our best interests at heart, and yet we're left with lingering questions. Was John Harrow a victim, a malevolent force, or simply a restless soul seeking peace? Did Lila's attempt at cleansing the house succeed in quieting the activity? Or did it merely drive it further into the shadows, waiting for the next moment to make itself known? The scariest part of Lila's story isn't the shadowy figure or the eerie tapping. It's the uncertainty. The knowledge that even now, as she shares her story, she's not entirely sure the haunting has ended. And maybe, just maybe, it hasn't. So what do you think? Is this a case of heightened fear and suggestion? Or did Lila truly make contact with something from the other side? Either way, it's a story that will leave you looking twice at the dark corners of your own home tonight. Sleep well, if you can.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.